Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson, they swiped another hour from us.
They did? What happened?
The time changed last night at 2 o'clock.
Was last night the time change?
The last night the time changed.
No wonder. Okay, there we go. So no wonder.
But Apple keeps you up to date.
Okay, so we think forward is what happened.
Yeah.
I didn't even... Yeah, Apple kept me up to date. I was wondering why... Rolex didn't get the memo.
See? There, the hood trust.
I mean, Rolex didn't get the memo. I was thinking to myself this morning, I was looking at the clock on the phone, and then when I put on my watch, I was like, wait a minute, that says 9, is it 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock? And so I had no, blissfully, damn, unaware until you just told me that I had lost an hour there.
Thank God you have friends.
Is this why people call their senators to complain about
this? Among other things, yes.
I'm about to write a strongly worded letter.
Well, I've got one coming to up next Friday, so I'll ask.
Okay, bring it up then.
Yeah, hey, I know you got a lot of stuff on your plate, but there's something I think you should really zero in here.
You know, I heard that there's a talk in Florida of getting off the daylight savings thing, but they want to be, you know, the opposite or whatever. We want to keep daylight time all the time. Is what it is, I think.
Yeah, Arizona does that.
But no, Arizona goes the other way, I guess, right? I don't know what. It seems
but
like
they don't
whatever.
Change.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because you're either, it depends on when you chose to do it on the calendar, whether you did it at a November crossover or you did it at a March crossover. So I think it's the thing. But I like, you know, a lot of people think, well, why don't we get it uniform? And I say, no, I don't like that. I like quirks.
Yeah.
I like quirky people, and I like quirky mm-hmm. things.
Every state should be on their own, march to their own drummer.
Yeah. The more things that you have that are quirky in between you and the surveillance state, the better.
There you have it. Well, thank you for solving that mystery for me, because I just couldn't, it didn't, I just thought, oh, well, that's interesting. My watch is exactly an hour off, and yet it's still running, because sometimes if you don't wear the watch, it will stop. I'd have to reset it and put it back on. But there we go. The mystery solved. So that's, you know, that's not going to change in the next 25 years, Dan. That's one of those things that's going to be durable.
Yeah. 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 Because some people will just not change. I mean, they'll have to have, you know, they'll have to have. And I don't think they can. I think the 10th Amendment to the 10th Amendment says any law that's not given to the federal government belongs to the state governments. Okay. And that would take a change to the Constitution to make it a federal thing. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very interesting, farsighted they were back in 1780s. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is. I've really been this last little period of time here. I've really been thinking about the, you know, I think your idea of thinking, you know, 25 years is so great, because I've been thinking, I've been here now, I've been in Florida for 25 years, moved here in 97. And, you know, I look at what's changed in those 25 years. It's not even the same. I mean, it's a completely different world we're living in here. And I can only imagine what this next 25 is going to be like. And I got to spend some time with you this week on our free zone connector call. One of the things I was thinking about is how durable the concept of thinking about your thinking is.
Yeah.
That's not going to change in the next 25 years. It's going to become even more important, I think, in the next 25 years than it even has been.
That's kind of like the cosmic safe house.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, if you're thinking about your thinking, you're doing your best thinking. I mean, it's just automatic best thinking, and the decisions that come from it are the best ones, and the actions that come are the best ones. I mean, and the reason is because it's a reflection of your unique ability as an individual right at the center. It's like where you're most operating according to your unique ability. Because when I'm thinking about my thinking, where I've been bothered by someone else's actions or opinions, when I'm thinking about my thinking, all that stuff just disappears. It just disappears.
You remove the layer.
Why am I bothering with that stuff? It has nothing to do with it. you know, things I have control over, things where I can make my progress. Yeah. 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 I do the quarterly book, and there, the one for March just came out, which is called Capitalism and Everything Else, where I'm saying there's only two things in the world. There's people who are really good at capitalism, and there's everybody else shouting their head off because they're not good at capitalism. And we call those communism, socialism. Yeah. But the one for this quarter is called Geometry, and I put it in quotation marks for staying calm and cool. Okay. And there's three rules. And the first rule is everything's made up. Okay. And that's the rule.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you think about the world, everything's made up. Okay. And the second rule is nobody's in charge. The third rule is life's not fair.
If you just got to go ahead with that.
And then you just take three of those. You know, it's a triangle, you know, and those are corner points. And, you know, a triangle can continually change its configuration, but on the inside, it has to add up to 180 degrees. Okay. Uh-huh. So, you know, you have, I think it's called the least triangle, and it's 90, it's 60, 60, and 60. Okay. Uh-huh. And then you have a right angle. It's called a Mides triangle. And it's 90, and then it's 30 and 60, 90, 30, and 60. Okay. Uh-huh. So the thing about it is that if you feel confident, it's because you're making stuff up and acting on it, and you're taking charge. And instead of worrying about whether the world's fair or not, you're just creating value that other people enjoy. Okay, uh-huh. If you do those three things, you're going to stay calm and cool, regardless of what everybody else is doing. Uh-huh. Because I'm reading more and more. I must have come across 15 articles in the last quarter about the age of anxiety and rage, where people are just responding unthinkingly, but over emotionally about what they think the world is doing to them. They don't have any rules for it's like they think everything's out to get them. And the truth is, everything doesn't even know they exist.
Yeah. Not, yeah. And so you're seeing all these. Well, you know what? Someone once told me your eyes only see and your ears only hear.
Yeah. Where is that? Was that on Mount Rushmore or something?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get myself a mountainside somewhere.
Mountain. Here we go. Yeah.
Or just a series of, you know, the sides of barns, like it used to be mail pouch tobacco and bourbon.
Oh, that's
boy, I'll cause more evidence than you can possibly predict.
Yeah, right, you
know,
right.
Your eyes only see and your ears only hear what your brain is looking. Whoa, watch out!
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Just hit it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that'll be the good about self-driving cars, Dan, is people will be free to look out the windows again.
Yeah. The big one there is not a technological one. It's a liability. It's a liability issue.
Yeah.
Who's liable if you're sitting in the seat?
Yeah. I know. This is wild, right? I've also thought that it's going to have to come. Like, you know, I just got my new next version of the Tesla, and it's pretty upgraded from the one I had. But the self-driving, the full autonomous driving option has a long way to go. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be as simple as.
We've had self-parking for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Let's go 10 years. So it does a good job at that. And, you know, if it's just you and your car.
Yeah. I think the reality
is. Go ahead.
You've had self-driving. You've had fully autonomous driving for 25 years.
For 20
as long
years.
As I've known you.
25 years. Yeah, fully self-driving.
You've had fully self-driving, phone and voice operated. Pick me up here. Mm-hmm. Take me over here. I'll see you at 1 o'clock, fully autonomous, and you've been ahead of the curve. And it's so funny how I thought about that in many ways, how looking at this.
We better explain that somewhere. We better explain that somewhere along the road here.
I look at we're waiting for this self-driving, but you have really just pushed the accelerator pedal and said, what is the outcome that I really want? I don't want to drive. I don't want to think about driving. I want to be and just get from where I am to where I want to go. And what could I do to do that and enter your FaceTime car service that you use in Toronto that picks you up and takes you wherever you want to go, where you want to go there without any involvement from you. The only thing you do is get in the car and drive as a passenger to where you want to go. Get right out at exactly the most optimal spot to get out. You don't have to deal with parking or anything. You don't need to worry about directions or traffic or
repairs, fueling.
Yeah, none of it. Spend zero time on the maintenance of a transportation situation. So I see about some of these things that we're waiting for the technology to get better. You know, that technology catches up. I was thinking about my, I was thinking about where we've come with food. I was doing in my journal just this morning, even a little chart timeline of, I was just putting some benchmark dates along the way, you know, looking forward only at 2030, 2040, 2050, like what, just kind of looking forward of how things are going to change here, you know, what we can see. And I was thinking about food as one of the things, like all the things I can't foresee right now, a thing when we're going to require food to fuel our meat robots that we're walking around in. And I thought about how it's to the point now, I've been using, there's a company now called Factor 75, and they're one of many meal services that will deliver, you know, shepherd ready to eat meals for you. Not like, you know, not as option between, you know, some of the ones that bring you the ingredient for the meals and you have to prepare and do that. These are ready.
Which seems like the worst of both.
Right, right. Yes. And then the
other, it always struck me, you're getting things delivered and then it's raw.
And you don't have cooked the stuff. Oh my God. And
I mean, what did you do in your last time to get punished in this time, you know?
Yeah. And so they've taken out the grocery shopping and stuff of it, but you still have to prepare the food. But so these factors.
Yeah. And then the other thing is you're trapped. You're trapped.
Yeah.
Because you have to make what they,
right,
you,
right,
know,
right.
It must be for people who've been in the educational system for a long time.
Maybe.
And lives have been directed, you know. Anyway,
maybe.
But somebody told me about that. Well, you just added to the complexity of my life.
Absolutely, yeah. And so the Factor 75 meals are, they're delicious, actually. And I would liken them to, you know, the meal on your first class flight in Air Canada.
Yeah.
You know, the meals are well, they're tasty, they're good.
And perfect portions.
Yes, that's exactly right. So it's everything.
Yeah, if I just ate Air Canada size meal, I would drop weight. You know, I would drop weight because, and you know, anyway, you know, you look at it and you say, that's kind of skimpy, but it's totally satisfying.
Yeah, these are perfectly like 600 to 700 calories packaged in a meal and delicious in every way and ready when you want in 2 minutes. And it's amazing to me that it's that way. So I thought, that's pretty interesting. But then I thought again, you know, you for, I don't know how long you've been doing this, but
22 years. Yeah.
Yeah. You have all of the meals prepared. You have a catering service that delivers
both
meals.
Both Chicago and Toronto.
Yeah. And so you have not had to think about cooking or any of those things. You guys have the meals delivered right there. And I thought back in 2002 when I first hired Courtney as our personal assistant thing. One of the first things I had her do, because there was no delivery available for anything in New Haven except for pizza and Chinese food, which you could get, right? So I had her go and get menus from every restaurant, all the restaurants that we would want to go to. And she put them in two binders. I had a binder at home and a binder at the office. And we had, all of a sudden, delivery for every restaurant that we wanted to. Because I would just look at the menu, tell Courtney what we wanted, and she would go and get it and deliver it for us. So if we were having dinner, we'd say, okay, we want to have this. And there it was at the time that we wanted.
Yeah.
So kind of like we created our own Grubhub and stuff, but now everything, you know, now of course every restaurant.
You know, it was Zoom, and you know, I remember the week before shutdown, you know, so we were closing in on it because it's Tuesday of this week. It was March 13th. I was in Chicago. And we had Babs and Kathy Davis were in Chicago that day. And they were consulting with all the other team leaders that we have. And across the system, we were seeing 50% cancellation rates. For the coming weeks, workshops, we were already down 50%. And, people were worried, and so when I finished in that workshop, not in that workshop, but a week later, because COVID was becoming a topical issue, asked me, would you guys ever think about doing ups virtually, where the workshops were? And they didn't even name the medium because nobody really even had explored.
Well, everybody was sort of, if you asked somebody, how in your video conference, it would have been,
Team or
Time or Skype was the other one or the Gmail one,
So anyway, and the week previously, so this would have been the 6th, somebody said, I said, I just can't see it working. Something's really lost. And then a week later, Babs and Kathy tell me that we're closing everything down until June. So this is March. So it's a full quarter. And I was tired. And I remember, the plane ride home, I was just pondering because I like new things, I like new things. So my mind was kind of, going through the possible universe, and I woke up the next morning and I said, all right, it's Zoom it is now, because 5 years ago, I'd started doing podcasts and some of the podcasts were in Zoom. We were not just talking to each other sound-wise, but it was like, and I really liked it. Of all of them, I've done Skype, which I thought sucked. And then there's other ones, which smell of corporate manipulation.
Right, exactly.
You're on the 105th floor of some global bank I just found them uncomfortable, but I really liked the quality of Zoom, and I like the, it was easy. It was really easy. And then I just threw myself into it. But the big change, Dean, wasn't us. The big change was now there was someone at the other end.
Right. Yes.
And they, and six, and it's like, one phone is not valuable. Two telephones are really valuable.
That's all we need.
Metcalf's Law. This is a guy, Sun Systems. I think Metcalf created Sun Systems back in the late 80s. And he has Metcalf's Law that the value of an interconnected electronic network. Okay, so he's being very specific here. It's the number of connections. Okay, so if you have 10 people on the network, it's 100. The valuation is 100. If you have 100 people, it's 10,000, And so that's why you get these incredible valuations in the network world. It's because of the connections, the power that you can have. And so I thrived on it. I mean, I just absolutely loved it. I just absolutely loved it. And it came to me very quickly that this was not a communication medium. It was a transportation medium. And I treated it as if I'm actually sitting in your study, I'm there. And not only that, I don't have to worry that much about my wardrobe because I only let you see what I want you to see.
Right. From the neck up, I've enjoyed your black tea.
And 2 days, I switched from the Harry Rosen approach to wardrobe to the Dean Jackson approach to wardrobe.
Yes. All black, and long blue. Sleeve shirts at all times.
Yes, my navy blue.
They are navy.
They're navy, but
dark
and blue. And blue jeans. You're a khaki guy, and I'm a blue.
That's
jean.
Right. Yeah.
There again, there's a binary situation that exists in the world. And sneakers. We both wear sneakers. Of our choice.
You wear glasses.
But just going back and sort of taking the whole range of things that we've talked about so far, my approach always when a new technology comes out is that I find a really smart human who's passionate about using this new technology, and I interact with the human. So
that was kind of my point about the examples of that everybody gets so excited about these new technologies, about ChatGPT, about all this AI, self-driving, all these things that are technology-based, but the reality reality is, in many cases, we can have already the outcome of what technology is with just some clear thinking and direction of other humans.
Yeah, I mean, it's who, not how, it's unique ability. I mean, it's everything. You know, I'm not good at navigating these things, but other people, and they're, you know, there, a lot of them are 40 years younger than me. They're just passionate about it. I mean, they're doing it at night. They're doing it on weekends. Mm-hmm. They get enough of it. Why would I involve when they're going to work out all the kinks? I mean, they're going to go through versions 1 through 10, and the record for technology and the Cloudlandia is it gets simpler and easier to use because they make their money in volume and numbers and, you know, worldwide connection.
We're disproportionately exposed to quick start from a Colby standpoint.
You and your business and me and my business. And, you know, for listeners who don't know what that means, this is a wonderful profile created by Kathy Colby, who I just had lunch with about 3 weeks ago. And she created a profile, which you can do it online. It takes about 30 minutes, costs you $50 online, Kolbe. And you just answer a whole bunch of, in this kind of situation, how would you go about it? In this situation, how would you go about it? In this situation, and then it puts it all together, an algorithm puts it all together, and it gives you a number, it gives you a formula, and ours, Dean, yours and mine is very close. I'm a 2-2-10-4, and you are a
4-4-10-1.
Yeah, but it's the 10 that's the quick, 10 it's the quick start, and it just simply means that where other people will need to get a lot of facts before they'll take action, we just take action. Or they'll need a whole system put together before they can take action, we just take action. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one, implementer, is whether you can do it in your mind or you have to have hands-on, you know, whether you have to have real things. So a lot of people who are really tend to want to see this stuff, and they want to feel it, and they want to touch it, and they want to flip it around and everything else. And so I have a 5, and mine comes out in artwork. I do really good diagrams and everything, but I could never make a living with that skill. You know, it's a good skill too, but just to push it a little further, you do fact-finding and you do follow-through creating systems, but not until after you've gone into action.
Right, yes.
Why would I do research before I've made the decision?
Okay. Right, exactly. Oh, that's so funny.
I make the decision. I say, wow, I need to know this. I need to know this. I'm missing a lot of the information here. But it's very specific to the decision that I've just made. You know,
I wonder if the one is, like my one implementer is why, like I don't generally use the tools themselves. You know, like I'm not that, like you're saying, even though you're a 5, but you're keeping a layer of human between you and ChatGPT.
Computer artists. I mean, you know, writer. Well, you have, I mean, you with the 90-minute book, you
decorate.
Yeah, you have a ton of people that with the, you know, the podcast firm that you have people who do Then you got all the delivery people in celebration who knock on your door. You just need someone in your house that'll go and open the door and bring the meal to you rather than having to get up.
You know what's funny is our friend Joel.
House staff is still important, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Joel Zadak, the coach member you and his me too. His client, Ronnie Chang, is a comedian who has a couple of specials on Netflix. And one of them was just that, talking about the level that we've gone to now of it's not enough that you have people like bring the food right to your door. We're going to need somebody to go get it from door and stuff it in our mouths and move our lips.
Yeah.
Like, where are we going?
Yeah. Well, one of our clients, I think it was Yeah, we did our first IP Value Builder workshop for a new program that I started where entrepreneurs can look at all the creative problem solving they've done since the beginning of their company. And it can now be translated, well, first of all, automatically it can be translated into copyrights and trademarks, which can be done online. But the third one is patents, and patents have real value. Patents are as well as your house. You know, and we have a great brilliant, you know, entrepreneur in the program, Keegan Caldwell from Boston, who has been the fastest growing IP firm in the United States 3 years running, but last year only the fastest IP firm, but actual law firm. He was the fastest growing law firm. And he's got all sorts of really interesting philosophies and strategies. And, you know, and I don't see how any other law firm, especially IP law firm, could even think about doing what he's doing, because he doesn't charge by the hour. He charges by the project. And and it takes balls to do that, I'll tell you, especially when you're dealing with very complex governmental. I mean, the Patent Bureau's got 10, you know, so he has to do this. But somebody was saying, you know, I pointed out that the two fastest growing industries in the world, and have been for probably the last 10 years, number one is information technology, which all of the things we're talking about today rely upon information technology, which gets better and more interconnected. But the second one is, and people said, you mean your kind of coach? No, I said, I mean any kind of. They said, you know, that because technology does not coach itself.
Right. Yeah.
You still need a human who is passionate about the technology to explain the technology and make it easy for other humans. I was noticing one thing. I was really quick. November 30th, when ChatGPT was released to the world, a week later, I went on Google and I said, ChatGPT coaches.
Of course. Now, there were 100. I haven't heard a thing about these since ChatGPT came about.
No.
NFTs.
No.
That's crazy. Everything is GPT. And I understand that
GPT-4. Kick to the corner. Kick to the corner, you know. Kick to the basement. You know?
Yeah. And they're over. So currencies, that's all old news. Forget about that.
Crypto is now just the plot lines for new courtroom.
Yeah.
The courtroom dramas, you know. And everything else, you know, and that, you know, that just shows you that a technology that's just immediately useful in a million different ways has the edge, you know, the edge on people's interest. Yeah. But the thing is, I won't touch it. And I keep talking to my team. I said, have you used ChatGPT? And, you know, they're in their 20s, 30s and 40s, most of them.
Yeah.
And I would say just anecdotally, I haven't done, you know, a survey, you know, about 15 of them are. And I said, if I have a series of things that I'm looking for, and I just write out a fast filter, a coach tool, and I send it to you, could you take that as the prompts and do something? And they said, we'd love to.
And that's a thing. It's such a, I've never seen one in the wild, but I imagine there are people who thrive in this would be fact finder implementers. I don't even know
very pale because they never come up from the
like one of those cave salamanders that never see the light of day.
Male, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And mom does everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, there were 300 in the last 3 months of the 4 months of the 2022, so just this past the end of last year, there were 300,000 staff fired by about the top 10 tech companies, you know, the high tech, Google and Apple and Amazon and Facebook and Twitter. And these are the individuals who are going to become the masters of ChatGPT because they all got a big payout. So their next half year is, you know, the income is there and they can just master this new technology. And then they'll go back and create entirely new platforms to destroy the people who fired them.
Yeah, right, exactly. I wonder, you know,
there's no motivation like revenge.
Yeah, right. I wonder, I heard, and I don't have the sourcing for it, but just telling me about the number of Kindle books that have been published on Kindle, Amazon, you know, in the last 90 days or first quarter here.
Yeah.
Exponentially bigger than the pace that books were being published prior to ChatGPT. There's many people now that are hearing book buy from Kindle that are up there. AI book are, you know, the real, that's, it's been an amazing uptick in the number of books that are.
Yeah. I mean, in 1994, I wrote a book called The Great Crossover. It was my first book, The Great Crossover. And what I looked at, I went back in history a little bit, and I used a particular event in the world in 1975, which was called the Thrilla in Manila, and it was Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. And it was the first sporting event in the world that went worldwide because it was by satellite television. And I said, I'm going to use this as the kicking point of the introduction of a new technological world that's going to change everything. And I 75 to 2025. So we're 3 years,
50 years,
two years to go. And look what's happened since 75 to 20.
Yeah.
And including GPT. But the other thing I said in that book is that there's been four human earthquakes where humans created something new and it caused a seismic shift in how people related to each other. And the first one was just language, speaking language. Okay.
Yeah.
And the first humans who kind of got on this must have decimated their other humanoids really fast. And they started, they just started this ability to communicate with words. You know, it was just amazing. And then the next one was writing that they were able, and they did it on clay. We know that, that basically. And it was mostly, the first part of it was when clay was used, it was basically keeping track of numbers, keeping track of, you know, accounts. And, you know, they just like have 8.5 by 11 pieces, an inch thick of, you know, clay inscription. They get the clay while it's soft, and then with a sharp instrument, they created, you know, the written languages developed out of that. But it'd be like you're remarkable, an inch thick made out of clay. And if you want another page, you get another
page at a time. Right. You get another clay.
Yeah. So that was huge. And so whoever got a hold of that just took over. And then the third one was printing, you know, Gutenberg 55, I think the year is. And that just revolutionized everything. And I said, this digital one is the fourth crossover. Okay. Uh-huh. But what happens is that writing, just being able to write on whatever clay, papyrus, you know, whatever they wrote, just allow very quickly around the world that everybody could acquire language. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you could do it over generations and you could do it over, so you could teach everybody. And then Gutenberg, when he came along, he took writing and made writing available to everybody. And I think what this GPT, you know, the buildup of all the technologies, they allow you to take what Gutenberg did and allow them to do it as an active agent.
Yeah. And now,
remember how hard writing a book is for most people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And how, I wonder, you know, how few, it's very interesting to see the number of books, you know, published by year.
I mean, it's akin to doing their own amputation.
Yeah, that's more
I mean, level. The fear and the difficulty and the pain and the dread. You know, I do one every quarter, so I've done 30. You know, I'm on my 34 and 34 quarters.
Yeah.
And people say, well, you know, what's it feel like? You've taken all the joy out of it. And I said, I've taken all the how out of it, you know. And, but I have 9 human beings and a lot of technology that this, that that pulls this off for me, you know.
Yeah.
And because it's not writing the book that's important, is that ideas that I have are in book form and they're forcing people in the program. So I think, you know, this is going to be different, but it's going to be the same as for what happened with itself, speaking language, writing yeah. language, printing language. Yeah, there will be a similar pattern into how this happens.
I just think about, Dan, what an amazing, like, the fact, I love the whole durable formatting. Like, you know, you're using the exact same, you know, chassis for the books. They're all the same size, with the same fold out, the same format, the same font, the same color palette. I don't even know what I would call it. There's definitely, or you say it, you look at a book from 100 feet away and you know that's a Dan Sullivan.
Yeah.
Slightly,
yeah.
Slightly bigger, wider than most books. That color palette that you mm-hmm. have is
cartoons.
Distinctly yeah. Strategic Coach.
Yeah.
Everything about
yeah.
it. 100%
yeah.
Helvetica.
Well, I can tell you, I can tell you exactly, because we were just comparing Toronto printing to Chicago printing. And we've had a Chicago printer now to do.
Okay.
Periodically, you want to see,
yeah.
you want to see what it is. And
yeah.
and it was, the Toronto was 1,000 for the first 5,000 books, all everything in, you know, the setup. See, the same setup every time. When we did the first one, we paid for the setup for everything. And we notified them that, look, you say, well, we've got the setup costs. I said, we handled the setup costs on the first one, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, did you throw it all away,
yeah.
you know? Yeah, no, they wanted to get a little secret profit in there. And I said,
yeah,
no,
right,
no.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, and we have a team at the printer,
uh-huh.
you know, and we even have a print broker. We don't even deal with the printer. We have a print broker who
yeah.
comes to our offices and works with our artists and our, you know, the production mm-hmm. manager and the production team and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once you've done 3 or 4 times, you're a total master at it, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But I couldn't do that after, you know, and you don't know any of that when you're writing your first book. And that's why I think you're 90 minutes. And I said, well, what's this first book that, if we go through Dean, what's this first book do? It says it has having written a book in the past. That's what it does.
Yes, right.
And that makes the next one 50% easier.
Yes, because now you're bringing the technology, the thing that you learned, the process, the model
yeah.
forward. That's IP, right? Really, I mean, that's really
yeah.
that.
No, it's IP. It's IP.
Figured out.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
kind of a, but I just think now, you know, if you, you know, put all of those in a, you know, in a box set, that'd be something to have the first, you know, 50 books when you get to that thing, what that would look like as a real, you know, a collector item. I bought one time, Dan, a box set of the Harry Potter books. In a cafe.
That was a heavy box.
Yeah. And I keep it on my, I keep it in my office on the desk, near my desk. And I use it as a visual inspiration to show what at time, and it's many billion now, I imagine, but at time, what $1 billion looks like. And I realized that she, you know, J.K. Rowling created from her head through her pencil onto pages in a cafe, the IP that became worth $1 billion. She,
oh, yeah.
you know, she withdrew $1 billion from her brain through her pencil.
Well, yeah. $1 billion to her. I mean,
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's $1 billion for everybody. That's one thing. But when the $1 billion is for you and there's
yeah.
billions more for everybody else, you've done something.
That was
really
what the
big,
funny thing was, because I was reading, I remember it so clearly. I was at a Barnes & Noble and I was sitting in the cafe and I was reading an article that said that J. Rowling had just become the first billionaire woman in the UK aside from the Queen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Queen was always the top net worth
yeah.
person. And J.K. Rowling not only was the first female richer than the Queen, she was the first Briton richer than the Queen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
with that,
she's getting there. There's all this swamp of the last, you know, getting into, you know, these mud fights over gender and everything
yeah.
like that. Yeah. And the people throwing the mud, I said, instead of wasting your time on this, why don't you go out and create something that's worth $1 billion and
right.
get it on the right
exactly.
get on the right side of it. I said, you guys are like ants crawling up her shoes, you know? I mean,
right.
Yeah. And the funny thing about it, even her young actors who she made totally famous were turning her, except the evil young boy, Malfoy, the actor who played Malfoy, I forget what, Drago Malfoy,
uh-huh.
I think his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he looked like, what was that series, The Child of the Dead?
The Munster.
The whole science fiction. Science fiction.
Oh, no,
first.
I don't know that.
Yeah, The Children of the Dead, but all blonde with blue eyes. And he kind of looked like that, you know. But in the stories, he forms. He actually becomes a transformed character. And he said, come on, you guys. Yeah. Nobody in the world would know who we are except for this woman, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he said, I'm going to turn on her now over some, you know, current political issue. And
right.
I said, come on, you guys. If I hadn't met her, you know, I hadn't been noticed by the people who were choosing actors for the plays, no, I would have gone through my whole life and nobody would have known me. And now everybody knows me,
yes.
you know, and which is good and bad. But yeah.
yeah,
but yeah, and this is part of the Cloudlandia. This is part of the Cloudlandia world, you know. Instant uh-huh. multiply, but it can be good instant amplifier or it can be really bad instant amplifier. And we're not used to living in that kind of world.
We really aren't. It's really, I mean, when you really think about the phenomenon of that, it's something that Joe Polish and I had a conversation about when we started I Love Marketing. You know, we were saying how, because it was just these conversations that we were having that nobody was listening in on. We were brainstorming. We had some really good ideas that night. And just thinking of what if people could just listen in on these conversations. And
well, that's all we're doing, Dean.
That's exactly it.
We're just doing singles conversational tennis.
Yes, right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
You serve, I come back, you serve, I see. You
know. No, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and people are in the lot. Yeah, people are in the back and forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've got a growing number of our clients say, boy, I loved the last one. The last one was really great, just watching what happens over the course of an hour.
No. Yes, that's exactly it. And so you think about what would have had to happen before this digital crossover. Like how it's not that long ago that this wouldn't have even been, you know, how to be able to.
Well, our long hand handwriting would be a lot better than it is today.
That's true. I bet you're right.
And you'd know who your mailman is.
Yeah. That's true. Remember, I think about that. I was reading, there's a book about daily routines and stuff. I forget what the book was, but it was just basically little summaries of what's known about what, you know, great people through history, what their daily routine was like. And
yeah,
I remember like in the hundreds and the, you know, stuff that people, they basically followed this general pattern. People were either like early birds and they got up and did their stuff, read the paper, had their tea, and then did their work, and then took time to do their correspondence. And that was like a part of everybody's day.
Oh, yeah.
Getting the letters, I guess, right? And doing their correspondence. You can imagine, you can visualize them sitting at their desk with a, you know, lantern going on and a fire burning and reading their letters and writing with a quill and, you know, inking on the letters, you know, my dearest Dan, I hope this letter finds you well. I've received the correspondence, you know, and going back and forth on the and now we just take it for you know instant. Now we can text somebody right away, you know, something.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got somebody coming to talk to me in 3 minutes. We're in Chicago today. I said we were in Los Angeles, but we're in Chicago.
Next week you're in Los Angeles. Yeah.
And I'm in Los Angeles. On the way to Los Angeles next week. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so next week I won't be able to.
Yeah, we missed two in a row, I think, from what I saw on my calendar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so great talk. I mean, this is great.
I love it. Always do, Dan.
Yeah. Okay.
Safe travels. Hugs to Babs.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you.
Yep. Okay, bye.